Hi, I'm Siobhan Fletcher, one of the journalists up at Manx Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of our newscast. Today, a redacted version of the report which clears the Health Minister of a bullying allegation has been published. The investigation came after the Health Services Consultative Committee, a panel which scrutinises the island's health services, claimed Laurie Hooper had subjected its members to an hour-long rant during a meeting. The published version does indeed include a number of redactions, with some whole pages blanked out. Whilst the report dismisses the complaints, it does state that the minister was able to and should have diffused the tension at the meeting. Well, today I caught up with the Health Minister, Laurie Hooper, to get his reaction to the report being published.
Well, having seen it now today, I think, I'm glad it's published, to be honest. Obviously, from the outset, I knew that the complaint itself didn't stack up. The report, I think, confirms that unequivocally. To my mind, it's pretty black and white in terms of what it says. It confirms that even around the things that I said in the House of Keys, for example, I wasn't wrong to say that. And we'll draw our own conclusions from what that means. And actually, it confirms again, for the avoidance of doubt, what I've been saying all along, which is that the committee, as was not operating in accordance with prescribed statute. So from my perspective, it's a clean sweep. It says exactly what I was hoping it would say when it was published. And I'm quite glad the Chief Minister has seen fit to release it.
And so, I mean, it is heavily redacted. There's like whole pages that are blacked out. The Chief Minister warned it would be. That's kind of been criticised online as a lack of government transparency. But would you have liked to have seen the unredacted version released? And why is it so heavily redacted?
So my understanding is this has been released in accordance with the principles of freedom of information, which means things like personal data or legal opinions would have been redacted. I'm assuming, having read through it, from the context of the bits that look like they've been removed, looks to be around the opinions that were submitted by various people, which I think would form under personal data. So I'm assuming that's what the redactions relate to. I don't think it matters all that much. I mean, again, based on what the complaint was about, at a single meeting in June, and knowing who was in the room, I would be quite nervous if it revealed, for example, things that the staff members in the room may or may not have said if they've given evidence, because they're quite readily identifiable. Everyone knows who they were. And I think if they had said things which certain members of the HSCC may have disagreed with, it could have left those members of staff open to more public criticism and abuse, which I don't think would have been acceptable. So I don't really have a view on the redactions, quite frankly. It's not my report. Like I say, as far as I'm concerned, the Chief Minister said he would release it in accordance with FOI principles. It looks to me to be what he's done, and the report, I think, speaks for itself.
And, you know, you mentioned there, this all concerns kind of two incidents, really. It's a meeting in June and some comments made in the House of Keys in October. Would you like to expand on your version of events about these two incidents?
Not really. I mean, like I say, the report itself, I think, covers everything. It explains that the version of events put forward by the complainants just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It doesn't support, isn't supported by the evidence that was provided to the independent investigator. And equally, the comments made in the House of Keys, I think there's quite a clear conclusion in there that asks, was the minister wrong to say this? He was not wrong. That for me, concludes everything. It says everything it needs to say.
I think the sort of main argument of this, it's all to do with what the function is of this committee. The report does go into detail at the beginning about that and what it is in statute. But I guess, what then is the role of the committee going forward? What do we need to know? What do the public need to know about the committee? What do they do?
So the role of the committee going forward is the same as it has ever been, actually. We didn't change the role of the committee when we changed the regulations in Tynwald. The role has always been to act as a consultative committee for the department. So when the department is making changes to policy or legislation, we will consult with the committee on those changes. But the committee also performs a secondary function, which is that of providing some scrutiny of services. So what they should be doing is reporting back to the department, and obviously now that Manx Care exists, to Manx Care, on how services are working from a patient's perspective, essentially. So getting that ground level, eye on the floor, eye on the shop floor kind of perspective that we may not otherwise see in the department. That's what they should be doing. That's what the law says they should be doing. That's what the report confirms the law says they should be doing. It's just not what they have been doing. And I think the going forwards, the hope, really, from my perspective, is that that is what they can start doing again, because I think there's some real value there in having lay people and, in some cases, retired professionals on that committee, providing the department with a perspective on how things are really working on the ground.
And in Keyes, the issue raised with the report was kind of inaccuracies, basically. So in his findings, he says, was the minister wrong and out of order to say what he did on the House of Keys on the 31st of October 2023? I think he was not wrong, but it was a pretty shabby approach for him to take. That's critical of your behaviour there, but why did you bring it to Keys like that? Why did it get aired in that way?
So I didn't really have a lot of options available to me, quite frankly. So the complaint was in, it was being investigated. Obviously, I couldn't comment publicly on that investigation. It wouldn't have been fair on anyone to try and, you know, sway opinion one way or the other. So I couldn't talk about the complaint. I couldn't talk about the investigation, which was intrinsically linked, I think, to the content of that report. But on the flip side of it, I was constantly being put under pressure, but publicly and also on the floor of Tynwald, to provide answers as to why I wasn't doing certain things that had been asserted were necessary. And actually, they aren't necessary. So laying the report, debating it isn't something that's required by law. And I needed to set out my reasons as to why I wouldn't support the things that were in it. I had already, of course, shared my misgivings with people in advance of that, off the floor, as it were, to try and forestall any public commentary. But ultimately, Tynwald members are entitled to ask questions of anything they like. They ask the question. I can only be honest with Tynwald, really. And so I had to be honest with Tynwald. That's the nature of the beast. And ultimately, as the report concludes, I was being honest with Tynwald, and I wasn't wrong to use the words that I used. I will be writing to the Speaker to ask him to clarify, in fact, because he did admonish me on the floor for using that terminology, but as it turns out, as it wasn't wrong to use it, I think really the record needs to be corrected. But ultimately, I didn't really have many options available to me. You know, unlike others, I wasn't running off to social media or to the radio station or the BBC to air my side of the story. I felt that it was better to try and protect the organisation, the institution that is the HSCC, rather than getting into a very public back and forth, I think, over every single issue. But in respect of the critical points around why I wasn't supportive of that report, Tynwald members asked me those questions and I had to provide an honest answer.
I mean, you mentioned the press as well. The report here references ourselves, Manx Radio, references Jeff, it mentions various media interviews. In your statement to the investigator, you said, in various Manx Radio interviews, which seem to have done little more than pour petrol on the fire, which sort of interviews did you take issue to? Was it the hearing from the other side of the argument? What was the issue?
So I never took issue with any of the interviews, really. What I found quite concerning was that there were people willing to go on the record and make these complaints very publicly whilst it was already being investigated. That's the bit that I thought was a little bit unfair, to be honest. And so I only ever responded. So I think I did a piece with Phil Gorn where I responded to questions that were put to me. There were questions put to me by Manx Radio or by Jeff where, again, I responded. I tried not to be the first one out of the gate, if that makes sense. But ultimately, I can't control what the media decide to report on. It was quite unfair, I think, on me being the subject of the investigation to actually have people going out there and telling their version of events, which, as it turns out, were not substantiated by the facts, were not supported by the investigator, who did quite a thorough job, from what I can tell, from his report. It turns out that wasn't substantiated, and really, it's quite unfair, I think, when this is going on, for one side to be going out there and throwing a lot of mud at the wall to see what sticks, when the reality is none of it does.
Would you sort of do anything differently going forward? The report says that you could have diffused the situation. I appreciate it's a difficult situation if there's two sides kind of battling behind closed doors, but would you take any lessons from this? Would you do anything differently than you did?
I'd like to think there's always things you can learn. Would I have tried to do things differently? Possibly, and I have been thinking about that a lot over the last few months. But I think the reality is, because of the nature of the disagreement, it was never going to be resolved amicably. It just wasn't. Ultimately, my view was, you should follow the law. You should do the thing that is required of you by statute. That was not the view that was held by others. Ultimately, I can't. I don't think there'd have been another way of resolving that other than by doing what we did ultimately, which was engaging with people as much as we could, consulting with them as much as we could, as required by law, but ultimately making a decision to say, we're going to have to change the law to make sure the way you work is made abundantly clear, so there is no room for this confusion or misunderstanding, and take that through the appropriate Tynwald process, which is ultimately what we did. That I think was unavoidable at the end of the day. Say if there was a better way of doing it, where we are, for example, making changes with the Ombudsman body or the Mental Health Commission, they're very much being done collaboratively and in that spirit of cooperation, because I think they also want to see the same changes. It's very different when you have people who are not wanting to see change and not wanting to support change, and actually are, in this case at least, pushing back in any way that they can. I think it would have been difficult to do things differently, but ultimately, yeah, I'm going to have to read through the report in some detail, I think, to reflect on, well, is there a better way of doing these kind of things going forwards?
Can you kind of understand the public frustration that this is seemingly like another distraction from government getting the job done? Do you share those frustrations? Can you understand that yes. public outcry?
Oh, this is a huge distraction from being able to get the job done. And from my perspective, actually, this has reached a point where not being able to talk about these things, to see what people are posting about me on the internet, to see what people are saying about me to the newspapers and whatnot, it actually started to affect me quite difficult times. It's been quite bad, and I wouldn't really want anyone to go through this, quite frankly. It is horrific to be on the receiving end of that type of harassment, really, when you're in a position where you know you've done nothing wrong, but ultimately you have to sit through it because that's what's in the best interests of the organisation, that's what's expected of you as a public figure. And it's not easy, actually, to sit on the receiving end of it and think, you know, crikey, you know, at what point does my wife see this, or my kids, or whatever? And you think, well, that's never going away, is it? It's always out there now. I'll always be the guy that had this complaint against him, and there's nothing I can do about that, even though, as it turns out, and as I knew all along, it wasn't substantiated, there wasn't anything to this. And that's been quite difficult. It's been weighing on my mind quite a lot, actually. We're trying to encourage people into public roles. We're trying to encourage people to stand for election. We're trying to encourage people to put themselves out there. And then when you do that, and you are on the receiving end of this type of issue, I can really understand why people don't want to do these jobs.
I feel like I'm going to prescribe something for you now pretend I'm Dr. Allinson. I think you need to, social media break would be helpful, because I think you can't escape sometimes the visceral, really, on social media. Do you feel like sometimes it's difficult for it not to go both ways if you're wanting to respond to people when you're seeing things that are incorrect about you?
It is difficult, I think. I have quite a firm approach to social media. I will give everybody a fair shout, but the moment you start getting personal or abusive, I'll just block you. And that's quite simple, because I don't think anyone should have to be on the receiving end of that. If you want to engage constructively, happy to do that. I will argue till I'm blue in the face with people on social media. I think it is an important part of my job as a public representative. But what I won't tolerate is abuse. And so as soon as you cross the line, that's it. Because you're right, sometimes you just have to put the phone down. Ultimately, you have to walk away from it. But the problem is, when it's not just social media, when it's being then portrayed through the mainstream media as well, it's very hard not to listen to Manx Radio. It's hard not to see what's being posted on the BBC or on Jeff the Mongoose or the online newspapers. That's where it starts to get a bit harder to avoid.
Do you think that you'd like to see any difference in the availability, really, then, of ministers being able to respond to things, or do you think it's a good part of your job to be able to keep that distance, if that makes sense?
No, I've been giving that a lot of thought, but I think the right thing is not to respond when these things are being investigated, for example. And I think that really needs to apply to all parties involved in anything like this, is if you're going to go down a process, let the process resolve itself rather than immediately going public, because it is very difficult on someone then who, you know, isn't really able to respond and say everything that needs to be said or tell the whole story publicly, because it isn't in anyone's interest. Ultimately, what the public want is they want me to get on with my job. That's what I've been elected to do. I've been elected to get on and make things better. That's what I'm trying to do. What they haven't elected me to do is to deal with this kind of nonsense. And I think that's the problem, really, is it's the nonsense often that makes headlines. It's the nonsense that starts to take priority, whereas the reality is, just let me get on with the job. You know, it shouldn't be that difficult.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.